The session is about a few advanced XAML tips and tricks. To be more specific, we're going to look into three things. The first one would be semantic zoom. For those of you who aren't familiar with semantic zoom, imagine a case like this in which you have a grouped grid view on screen. So grouped by credit cards, that's a category. These are the types of credit cards, housing loan, investment products, etc., etc. Now, you can imagine applications which have quite a few of those categories. Now, if you have all of them nicely laid out in a grid view like this, it can still be annoying for your user to have to go completely to the end to get to the last category. Now, there's a way to navigate in the same view easily through semantic zoom, which is what happens when the user pinches out on your screen or uses control scroll. And then you actually get, you're still in the same context, so this is the same data. But it's actually the easiest way to look at it is this is the same data but zoomed out. So now we actually see only the categories, credit cards, housing loan, investment products. And once you click one, you automatically go to that correct place in your scroll viewer. So that's the general idea behind semantic view. The second one we're going to talk about is the data template selector. So you might have a grid view with a bunch of items in it, or a list view, or something like that. But not all items have to look the same. For some items, you might want to use another data template than for others. For those of you who have used WPF, you know about data template selectors. And there's a lot of implementations for that in Silverlight as well, by the way. And it also exists in Windows 8 XAML. So we're going to look into a data template selector. For example, if you look at the second item here, Platinum or Titanium card, that's another data template. I just varied it by changing the background color of this this border here. And the third thing we're going to look into is a variable sized grid. That's actually what you're seeing now. So this is one grid view. And the first item has different size than the other three items. So the item panel of this grid view can actually accept variable sized items in it. So what we actually have here on screen now is a page which includes semantic zoom, a variable sized grid, and as you see here, data template selector. So these are three things we're going to look into. Okay, let's have a look at that. Okay, that should be good. So I can quickly go through this now. Just told you about all it. So what is the semantic zoom? It's actually a way to be able to navigate easily through the same context, the same page. So it's important to notice that that is the general idea of a semantic zoom. The name more or less says it itself. It's a way to zoom out on the data that's already visible on the page. So one of the guidelines is that you shouldn't use it for other kinds of things. A few other things about the semantic zoom. It's not good to be used in snap view. It's not possible to use a semantic zoom inside of a semantic zoom, which is one of the questions I was asked at some time. So semantic zoom is specifically for this type of problem where you have a large amount of data on your screen and you want to allow your user to easily navigate in between it, to actually zoom out of your data. That's the easiest way I can explain this. So let's see how we can do that. It's actually not hard at all. But the fact that we're using MVVM makes it just a little bit more tricky. But as for everything, there are solutions to that. So let's go back to duplicates, okay. So as you might remember, we have a collection view source that contains are grouped and ordered categories. So to repeat, grouped and ordered categories is an observable collection of category, of product category, of category group, in which each item in this list contains, in its turn, a list of catalog products. By stating that our source is grouped, we can use the collection view source as the source of a grid view, and we will be able to use the grid view group styling and grid view grouping possibilities out of the box. So that's actually what enables this. And this is what we see on the main page. You navigate to it, that's what we see. How do you get semantic zoom in this? Well, actually, there's a semantic zoom control, as you could have imagined. Just a XAML control, and you can add that to your page. And it has two templates, let's say, two content containers you can fill. The zoomed out view, and of course, the zoomed in view. So let's have a look at that. Here we go. And this is the zoomed in view. So in my zoomed in view, I have a grid view. This is already a little giveaway on variable size grid, by the way. It's my own type of grid view. We'll get into that later. For semantic zoom, it's important to know that this is just the zoomed in view, the regular view I get on my page, which is a grid view bound to the grouped items view source I defined in my XAML a few moments ago, or I've shown in my XAML a few moments ago. Next to that, there's not that much special about this. It's just the same grid view used throughout the application. So we didn't actually do anything to the zoomed in view. Now the zoomed out view is where it becomes a bit more, where a few new things come into play. As you can see here, our zoomed out view is also a grid view. And as I've shown in the demo, the zoomed out view only shows our categories. So it shows large tiles with the categories, which are actually the groups used in the zoomed in grid view. And as you can see here, if you look at the data template of this zoomed out grid view, you can see that it's always bound to group.title. So actually, the big question that remains is, how does this grid view know where it gets its item from, where it gets its item source from? Because the other things I've shown you, like how it automatically snaps to the correct item once you click it, that's built in. So you get that out of the box. You don't have to do anything for that. So actually, the one thing that's important here is to know where it gets its items from. And this is where a bit of trickery comes in, let's say. If you're using CodeBehind, this is quite easy to do. Because in CodeBehind, all you have to do is, let's put it like this. Let's go here. This is actually what you have to do. You set the item source. So what I actually do is I take the semantic zoom, I get the zoomed out view, I cast it to list view base. Grid view inherits from list view base, just as a list view, so it's the same. And I set its item source to a property or a variable called collection groups. Now, what is this collection groups? This collection groups is actually the collection groups property of my grouped items view source, which is the collection view source I defined in my XAML. So this is where it gets its data from. It actually gets the groups from the collection view source I defined here, from this one. And thanks to the fact that by writing code like that, both the zoomed out view and the zoomed in view, both those grid views, are actually bound to the same collection, where one is bound to the groups and the other one is bound to the groups and shows the child items, catalog products. Due to this fact, this snapping automatically works. So due to this fact, the fact that both zoomed in and zoomed out are actually connected to the same data source, be it one to the groups and the other one containing the children, this semantic zooming works. So that's how semantic zoom works. The only problem is that you actually do have to do this in code behind. So as far as I know, I might be wrong, but as far as I know, the only way to really do this is by writing code like this. I haven't found code to be able to bind this yet. Maybe it's possible. I would like to know that. So the little workaround I do is I let the products group page accept the message type set semantic zoom hub message. And this message is actually sent every time my catalog products are loaded and filled on the property on my view model. So that's a little way around to ensure that your zoomed out view actually keeps on working. Okay, so that's the important part about semantic zooming. And as for the rest, you actually get, as I've shown you, most of it out of the box. So it's a very easy way to implement some nice extra way of navigating to the same page to your users. With the one disadvantage, you actually do have to use the collection view source and these collection groups. But luckily, you can bind the item source of the collection view source itself. That's possible. Okay, so after that, okay, that should be good. There's the data template selector. I've also shown you this. That's a very nice way to ensure that not all items in your grid view or in list view have to be shown in the same way. That's often the case in a lot of applications. Sometimes alternating row styles are used with this, but more often it depends on the type of data you get. So how do you implement the data template selector? It's actually quite simple. There's a class called data template selector, and you have to create one of your own. So you inherit from the data template selector, and you override the select template core method. And in that select template core method, what you get is the item that's bound, well, one of the items of the item source that's bound to your grid view. So for each item, you will get that item in the data template selector. And then you can look at any property of the item you want to select the correct data template for that item and return that. And that's the data template that will be used to display that specific item. That's as far as implementation goes. And then, of course, you still need a way to access this data template selector. And the easiest way is, or the default way, is to define your data template selector as a static resource and bind the item template selector property of a grid view or a list view to that static resource. So I'm going to show you. There we go. Onto the data template selector. So, first thing you do, you create a data template selector. I've named it example data template selector. I had a lot of fantasy when I was making this example. And what I do is I override, as you can see here, the select template core method. And the select template core method gets an item. This is what it's bound to, so in this case, a catalog product. If you're writing data template selectors to be more less specific, that's possible as well. Typically, base classes, interfaces, you know how to do that. But I tend to find that data template selectors are actually inherently bound to the type they get in. So try to cast it to catalog product. Just in case this fails, I return the base Slack template core. That's the one defined as data template if you want. And in this case, I have very interesting method to select the data template. If the short title contains an E, I return the regular template, and otherwise, I return an alternative template. So, regular template and alternative templates, where do these come from? As far as my data template selector is concerned, those are just properties that are set, that are bound, that it's bound to. So that means that at a place where I will define this as a static resource, I also have to input a regular and an alternative template. So let's have a look at that. I use the example data template selector only on my products group page. So that's why I defined it in the page resources of that page. That's actually a small tip as far as performance is concerned. If you're using data templates or data template selectors on one page only define them there. What typically happens in a lot of applications is that you have a resource dictionary with all your data templates in it. I like that way of working, but it's actually quite counterproductive if you only use the data template on one specific page. Because what actually happens is the first time that data template resource dictionary is accessed or needed, which typically you you import through your app XAML, I guess, or you define there, it has to be fully parsed. So it's actually a bit of a shame to parse data templates that are only used on one page in your application at the start of your application, while the user might not ever go to that page. So that's just a small tip. So the example data template selector, I define it and I say, well, the regular template should be this one, and alternative template should be this alternative product template. And where do these come from? Well, I've just defined them right above here. So those are just data templates in my pages resource dictionary. One with the blue background, the other with the gray background. So I've created my data template selector, I've defined it, and I've put in the properties it needs. I've provided it with the properties it needs. So now I just need to ensure that my grid view knows how to use this data template selector. So if I remember correctly, the grid view is in the zoomed in view. And this is the line that makes it work. Item template selector is static resource, my example data template selector. So this ensures that for each item, your data template selector will be used to select the correct template. As you can see here, I haven't defined a data template for an item. I have defined one for a group, but I have nowhere defined one for a single item. It's actually my data template selector that's used for this. So let's see if this actually works. Like that. It works. I'm in my data template selectors select template core, and now each item will be checked whether or not it contains an E, and then the template. A lot of titles contain an E. And then the correct template will be given back. And this, of course, is the results. So the regular one and the alternative one. OK. So what's left is the variable size grid. So let's look at that one. How do you do that? Well, A variable-sized wrap grid, you can actually set the item panel template of a grid view to a variable-sized wrap grid. You might have noticed that already if you've worked with grid views. Problem is, it doesn't really do anything. You can set the item panel template to a variable-sized wrap grid, but it doesn't know how the items should span across your grid view. So that's what you have to do yourself. So first thing to do is ensure that your grid view is using a variable-sized wrap grid as an item panel template. That's the first one, or variable-sized grid. And the next thing you have to do is you will have to create your own grid view class by simply inheriting from grid view and overriding one method. So the one method you will override is the prepare container for item override. It's a bit of a weird name. Anyway, prepare container for item override is the method that should be overridden. And what you get in this method is just a bit like as with the data template selector. You get the item from the item source grid is bound to. Item by item you will get. And in this method, you have to set the row and column span that the variable sized wrap grid should apply to that item. So it's a bit like using a regular grid in XAML and row span and column span properties of items in that grid. So it's two attachable properties, and the same goes for row span and column span that should be set on the items in your variable size wrap grid. Now there are other ways around this. You can use bindings for this if you want. By, for example, creating a row span and column span property on each item. That's another way of doing this. But I tend to like this approach because it gives me... Well, I tend not to like to have row span and column span properties on my classes. Well, so, create your own grid view and override this method, in which you state which row span and column span should be used. And of course, you have to use it. So in XAML, instead of using regular grid view, you use your newly created grid view class. And of course, you have to set the item panel template to use a variable sized wrap grid. There's a few more things, a few more possible options you can set here. Of course, in this item panel template, just as with other item panel templates, it has properties like margins and stuff like that, which defines the margins around each item. But the nice thing is you can also optionally define the orientation, whether or not it should go horizontal first and vertical afterwards, or exactly the other way around. And what's also interesting is the maximum number of rows or columns can be defined. So that's one property. If the orientation is horizontal, it will use, say, is it columns and otherwise rows, or the other way around. And the nice thing is, if you set this, you will indeed have only the maximum you define. If you do not set this, the grid will try to adjust itself to the screen resolution and DPI. So that's quite interesting to know that it should... You should get that out of the box. Although I have noticed that sometimes it results in a bit weird behavior. But so, I'm going to show you how this works. I've created my own grid view. I think I called it home grid view. Where did I put it? Yeah, where did I put it? Controls. That sounds logical. So, it's actually very easy. Just for demo purposes, I have created an index property on my product. Definitely for demo purposes. And just state that when this is the first item, row span 2, column span 2, and otherwise just use row span 1, column span 1. And that actually results, you've already seen that I used this grid in XAML, right? So that actually results in this grid. So this is the first item. As you can see, it spans two columns, two rows, and the other one's one column, one row. So this is how it works.